Hit up DuckSports.com on Twitter. Use the handle at @SteveMims_RG. Mr. Mims, how are you and the family holding up during this insanity?
All good. Just cracked a cold one, so I'm ready to roll.
On your Twitter profile, your picture has a photo of your two kids that's been up there for a lot of years. So as far as school-wise, where they're at, how much of a hassle is it with them, or are they all good with the homeschooling?
Well, it's actually, yeah, that picture is a little outdated. You're correct about that one. One of them's, the oldest one there is now in college, and she would prefer a little bit more of a social scene, and, you know, you're a freshman in college, you'd like to get to know some people, so she's been a little disappointed with that, but the sixth grader has no problem waking up and going to school on the couch, so it's been, one is thriving, and the other one would like to see it end, so it's been two different extremes in the Mims house.
Right. So obviously you've been wired into the state prep scene for a long time. OSAA this week with the pandemic front and center set the stage for the sports year. They're going to go basketball January to March, then football through May. What did you make of that announcement?
Well, I think that's probably the best case scenario at this point because you can't really overlap them. You know, you can't say, hey, we're going to do football in the spring at the same time as spring sports, because especially at the smaller schools, so many kids do both. So you almost had to kind of keep separate seasons. And, you know, if you're doing it in 6 months, that just gives you the two. So it would be interesting, you know, a 7-week regular season, which basically takes away non-league. So you're just going to play your league people. And then, you know, in basketball and volleyball, those things, you could still have a, you know, you could have a playoff or a state tournament that 8th week. But in football, it's going to be almost like a bowl scenario. So I don't, it doesn't look to me the way they read it that there will be state champions crowned in football. It'll be more of sort of a, you know, kind of a playoff, a 1 week playoff deal, because they're limiting everything to 8 weeks. But basketball and some of those other sports will probably have a little bit more better chance to have kind of a traditional crowning of a champion.
Next week, we've got the 120th U.S. Amateur Golf Championship, and it's at Bandon Dunes. And, of course, you talk about legendary, you know, you're talking about winners only, guys named Arnie, Jack, Bobby Jones, Tiger. I know DeChambeau won it, I think, 5 years ago. So just, I feel like this is a simple question, but just to be able to get out and cover an actual sporting event probably sounds pretty good right now.
Yeah, it sounds good to me. I might have to try to see if they've got a little tee time available on Monday afterwards for me. But it's been 4 months probably since I've seen an actual sporting event, so I'm excited. I'm going to go over there for the, you know, it's a week long deal, but I'm going to go over there next Friday, which is for the quarters and then the semis and the finals, and cover it for 3 days. And USGA's, you know, they always put on a top notch deal. I covered the U.S. Senior Amateur was at the Country Club, Eugene Country Club, a couple years ago. So. And yeah, I mean, these are guys that people don't know the names, but man, when you watch the golf, these are the next pros, and these are you know, a bunch of guys that are, you know, if you watched it, you would know the difference between them and the PGA pros. And so I'm kind of, you know, as a guy who goes over to Bandon every year and plays and has played there quite a bit, it'll be fun for me to watch how real golfers play that course as opposed to how I play it.
That's awesome. And it's, of course, it's a great track. I'm talking with Steve Mims of the Register Guard. Obviously, you've been around here a while. I mean, back to the Rich Brooks era through Bilotti and Coach Cristobal. When you see major recruiting services ranking this class of 2021 and you see third, you know, what this staff in particular, what do you make of them just taking things to this unprecedented level, luring this kind of talent here?
Yeah, it's pretty fascinating. You know, I've got friends who played at Oregon, you know, kind of in the 90s, and I was out actually playing golf with one of them a couple of weeks ago, and yeah, they just kind of chuckle about, you know, the recruiting classes we had were a bunch of guys from, you know, that you know, weren't turning down UCLA for Oregon. These were guys that Oregon was their best offer they were getting. You know, they were getting the people that UCLA and USC didn't want. So it is fascinating to see the other end of it, and you know, just to see it go from, you know, and under Chip and Helfrich, and I'd say they were recruiting fine, but it wasn't something that they publicized. You know, there was no social media accounts for those guys. And to see now a staff that's so different in terms of, you know, every time a kid commits or whatever, everybody's out on the social media, and, you know, a time there's an offer, just kind of the way they're doing it so publicly and, you know, not trying to hide the offers they're given like maybe some previous ones did, but rather trying to kind of you know, pump it up and make it a big deal to try to kind of impress the kid and get a bunch of fans to jump on there. It's fascinating to watch the way it's changed. Yeah, from 30 years ago, but even from 6 years ago.
Let's assume there will actually be a college football season this fall. The Pac-12 presented a plan last week, you know, push the start back. Actual games don't even start for another 7 weeks. We know at the end of the day, the virus dictates policy. What did you make of the conference-only 10 games, half at home, half on the road, with some flexibility should there be cancellations?
Yeah, I mean, that's the best thing you can do at this point. You know, I like the fact that you had the week one opponents all had the same bye week later on, so that if you can't get started on the 26th, you build in a later week to do that. I think that made sense. And then, you know, pushing the conference title game back basically, 3 weeks after the last scheduled regular season game, so you have a chance to do that. But I'm with you. I'm in the highly unlikely that we see college football this year camp. I understand why these leagues are putting out schedules and applaud the fact they are, but it almost just feels like hoping and praying that it happens, because we all know the financial implications of it. But the more and more we see, you know, the FCSs go to the spring and we see UConn, I think we're just going to kind of see this as, you know, unless there's some major progress here in the next couple weeks, it feels like it's going to be a hard time getting teams on the practice field. And even if we get to a season, it feels like it's going to be almost like Major League Baseball, you know, where we've seen the Cardinals now have 8 outbreaks, and they're, what, 8 games fewer than anybody else, and the Marlins have played 8 games fewer. It feels like we're going to get outbreaks here and there that where some teams maybe get in 11 games, some maybe get 7, some get 6. Maybe if some team's 0-6, they just decide this isn't very much fun anymore, we're going to call it off. So I think a best-case scenario this year is a really kind of scattered college football season, but quite honestly, I'd be surprised if we saw a kickoff by the time we got to September 26th.
So if I told you, I took a poll yesterday on Twitter and I said college football this autumn, and you had 3 options. 1, no way. 2, they'll start, then shut down. Or 3, they'll start, finish, and actually crown a national champ. Would your vote be that it's just not going to happen, or that they'll give it a run and shut it down? Because it doesn't sound like 3 is your ballot.
No, I think I'm in the no way. Like I say, I know they don't want to do that, and I know that they're all pressing forward, but I think that NCAA is going to cancel fall sports, which doesn't include football, since football is under the guidance of the college football playoff. But if the NCAA cancels volleyball and soccer, and most of these schools like Oregon are having very limited, if any, you know, in-person classes, I think the optics are going to get to the point to where college football is going to realize, look, we can't be the only sport playing and the only students who are on the campus. And we've also seen in recent weeks that, you know, I think the plans always, or the thoughts always been, you know, hey, these players really want to play, and if, you know, they're told to go play, they'll go play. And we've seen now the last couple weeks that, no, these players are questioning the, just, you know, how safe it is for them and what precautions are being taken for them. So I just think that overall deal, it feels like every day it gets a little closer, and I think by the time we get to the end of August, you're going to see them throw the towel in before it can start. I think they'll just realize it's an impossible task at this point to even try.
Yeah, you know, the frustrating thing is we know what happened when the pandemic hit and everything shut down the second week of March. You had a men's basketball team that I would have bet anything that was making it to the Sweet 16. The women were probably going to play for the national title. And now you see it looks like Oregon in football is like this prohibitive favorite to win the North and defend their title. So it seems like that just logical to say that that just adds an element of frustration for fans, because, you know, for the team that was going to go 2-10, it's like, yeah, maybe we'll get better next year. But man, the Ducks look kind of loaded again.
Well, and add in the fact that it was probably the best non-conference home schedule in the history of Oregon football. You know, right. You had the number 2 preseason team coming here. You had the number 1 FCS team, and you had a 10-win Hawaii team. So add in that. I'd also add to what you're saying, you know, I've made the point that I'm not sure that there's a college town that's had worse, you know, lost more from this pandemic in terms of just athletics than Eugene, because add in the grand opening of Hayward Field and the Olympic trials and the Pac-12 championships. Jeez. I mean, you add in, every time I drive by that, I think, man, we were still, you know, so you add in all the events that were supposed to be at Hayward, the best college, you know, the sport that people in this town love the most, and now you had, you know, after years of having, you know, some stinker games in non-conference, now you got 3 really good ones that people were excited about. you mentioned the women's basketball. I mean, I'm not even getting into softball, which was 22-2, but, and then people have lost a lot more than sports in this, and I make that point clear, but
sure.
If you're looking at a town, a college town the size of this, I don't know if there's a fan base that's lost more than the Oregon fans just on everything that's got taken away from the timing and the success that was potentially to come.
All right, one last thought for Steve Mims of the Register Guard, Oregon basketball. Obviously, there's a hole with the departure to the NBA of Peyton Pritchard. Since we spoke, I believe, LJ Figueroa transferred from St. John's. So what have you learned about him and maybe the kind of game he's bringing to Eugene?
Well, it's interesting, you know, because he's, you know, he has to appeal for an extra year of eligibility. But it seems to me that in a COVID world, if you're coming from New York to Eugene, you'd have a pretty good case to the NCAA, you know, particularly the time that he left when New York was really, you know, a center of all this. I think, you know, we've never come to expect the NCAA, you know, you never know what they're going to rule on these things. But it feels to me like anybody transferring New York to Oregon is going to have a pretty good case to say, hey, look, I left because this pandemic was, you know, really kind of centered there, and I wanted to go someplace safer. So I think they'll get him eligible, and if that's the case, you know, it's going to be an interesting team next year because they've got the two transfers in Eric Williams and Eugene Omorumi, and so now you add in kind of LJ, who's also in that front court. It'll be a really experienced front court without guys who Oregon fans have seen before. You know, you'll have three transfers. Well, I think, you know, Williams and Figueroa will kind of take care of that three spot with one of them a starter, and I think Omorumi ends up starting at the four, so it'll be a really veteran team, even though fans may not know who they are. So I think, you know, most of the preseason top 25s I've seen, Oregon's out and closer to the 30 to 35. I think people are underselling that because I don't know that people realize kind of what the transfers are. And just, with Dana Altman, if you give him a few guys who've been in the system for a while, those have traditionally been pretty good years, much less talented guys, which, you know, Williams averaged 15 a game at Duquesne, and Omorumi was a 13-9 guy at Rutgers, and LJ was, you know, a 15-4 steals a game at St. John's. So it's going to be a really good group now, you know, depending on when they get to practice. If it ends up being hampered there, that could hurt them, but I think this team's going to be better than most of the preseason projections are.
So, again, all we have to pull off now is have an actual season, and we can see how it plays out.
Yeah, there is that still. And I think in that, you know, I think college basketball is probably going to, I think they're going to cut out the non-conference and just regionalize it. You know, I don't think you're going to see the Texas Southerns, you know, and kind of these small schools that go visit, you know, eight schools in 12 days type thing. I don't think anybody's going to trust the testing on that. So I think any kind of a non-conference schedule for Oregon is probably going to be three games against University of Portland, three games against Portland State. You know, maybe Seattle U wants to drive down. But I don't think, you know, I don't think Oregon's going to end up going to that Emerald Classic. I think all those kind of tournaments will be canceled. So I think non-conference in college basketball is going to be completely regional, and then they'll hope that they can kind of make some progress before conference play starts, which this year conference play starts actually in earlier December because of the fact that they've gone to the 20-game schedule.
Man, does it ever end? Somebody give me a finish line. Folks, he's Steve Mims of the Register Guard on Twitter, SteveMims_RG. My friend, I always appreciate your time and insight. Wishing you and your family well. Travel safe. Enjoy the USAM at Bandon. And we'll catch up soon, and maybe we'll have, you know, like a season to talk about.
That'd be kind of fun. I appreciate it, Steve. Always enjoy coming on, man. Thank you.
All right. Have a good one, Steve.